Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. Happy New Year, Dump Truck.
Happy New Year to you, RC, and to all our listeners.
Today we have a hell of a show, really, just to put it bluntly. We have Eric W., somebody that everybody has been requesting for a while here. He's going to be talking about his mapping adventures, and he's going to be talking about what it's like to live in Canada.
And we'll also touch on his tools.
All of his tools.
All of them. And Trench Brim.
And on top of that, we're going to actually figure out what Dump Truck's new rap album is called.
Oh, yeah. Just wait for it.
It's going to drop hot, baby.
Yo, dude.
We had a PC at home, and I know I was into other id Software games. So I'd played Wolfenstein 3D. I'd played a bit of Doom at a friend's place, but I never had it at home. It's weird. Like, I don't really... So I was only... Let's see. I would have been like 8 years old when Quake came out.
Oh, man. So much life to live. So much life to live.
So, yeah, like, I don't remember being specifically, like, if my parents said you can't play Doom, but I also, like, didn't try to, like, bring over the floppy disk from my friend's place. So maybe it was just, like, I realized that they probably wouldn't approve of Doom or something, but I played like Commander Keen, so 1-4 quite a bit.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, I was just generally DOS gaming. I didn't have any console. I didn't have a Super Nintendo or any consoles or anything, and I found DOS gaming was just, there was a lot of awesome stuff. So
now, were your parents mean like mine? Because they're like, we won't have that garbage in our house.
It was, yeah, I guess they were pretty hands off, and like, I played some of the text, so sort of like adventure games with a text parser. So I guess some of the Sierra ones, and like I remember Hugo. I don't know if you recall, there was like a shareware like text parser adventure series.
So no, it's like
Hugo's House of Horrors or something. And they were really difficult, and you had to enter like the typical thing with these parser. You had to get just the right phrasing, like I don't know, like walk.
Are you the key master?
Yeah.
That got epic.
Pick up key, or like use key and door, unlock door with key, and they were like only accept the right phrasing.
So you were interested in all that logical stuff early on. That sounds because it makes a lot of sense how you kind of ended up being this master programmer.
Well, yeah, I guess I liked all kinds of DOS games, and I think even like early on, the id Software stuff were some of my favorites. And yeah, I played a lot of Commander Keen 4, especially. I think that was like 1-3 were their kind of first engine, and then 4 was the upgraded engine with like, I don't know. Did you guys play any Commander Keen at all?
You know, I'm a wannabe. I kind of picked it up at Wolfenstein, so I've never gone back and played Keen, but I've seen it. I've seen videos of it.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely played a little bit of Commander Keen, not a whole lot, but I'm sorry not to interrupt, but before we get too much further, I wanted to share a story. You guys were talking about being grounded from video games and stuff. This popped into my head when you were talking about that. But I remember in the 90s, my mom was trying to ground us from all kinds of stuff like Ren and Stimpy and whatever else. and Mortal Kombat was one of those things, and it just made me laugh thinking about it, where I think at the time I had a Game Gear or Game Boy or something like that, and I kind of like whispered to my sister because my mom didn't know I had the game, and I was like, do you want to see me rip somebody's spine out? And my mom overheard that. She was like, what? But
you've been definitely in the Quake single player scene since the beginning. And so now we usually talk to people about multiplayer. So did you have any experience with multiplayer, or was it just strictly single player?
Yeah. So I remember all I really remember is like a little bit of a three wave capture the flag. Mm-hmm. I was playing on a modem, and I remember thinking it was really cool, like the power-ups. Some of the maps, there were a couple of maps I really liked. There was one with like they're sort of symmetrical, I guess that was normal, and there's like an id base one with two halves that was really cool, and then there was one with sort of two castles and then like a lava room in the middle with like some power-up ruins and stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure that was 2-4, I would imagine.
Yeah, 2-4 probably.
Yeah, version of 2-4. Yeah, those I remember those days when Three Wave came out. It was so polished, you know, even the mod version was really polished, and it just goes to show, you know, how a good polished, you know, experience can just blow people away and catch fire, because it really did catch fire in the multiplayer scene very quickly. People, yeah, as soon as that came out, people are all over it. And then I guess they hired Zoid to do the expansion pack, the mission pack, the second mission pack to add, or they grabbed it. I don't know the whole story. One True Purple's like shaking his fist at me right now. But I don't remember the entire story, but I know he was involved and they kind of ported it and made a professional version, but people still kept playing Three Wave. You know, and then it of course went to Quake 2 and Quake 3. So,
So I was on a modem. I don't know if the experience wasn't, or like the lag was bad. I don't really remember, but I just remember for me, it was like, it was cool to play a little bit, but I didn't really get into multiplayer. And I've, like, even ever since then, I've sort of found it's appealing in a different way. There's sort of the competitive aspect of mm-hmm. multiplayer. And for a single player, I'm more interested in, like, it's quite a different feeling. It's like exploring the mappers, the environments they're creating, and like maybe a bit of a story, even if there's no story directly told in the map, there's sort of like the environmental storytelling and things.
It's funny you say that, because last night in preparation for this interview, I played three of your maps. And I had played one of them before long ago, the E2M7 remake in AD, but I wanted to play through it again because I love that. I love the original and I love your remake, so it was really fun. And I found more secrets last night, which is cool. Oh, that's what nice. That does. But I played the ones you had sent me a link for, the Coagula 3, Cadath, and then Ides of March. And you know, when I first went into Ides of March, it's kind of, I'm assuming this is one of your early ones, but it's very rough around the edges.
It's pretty rough.
But the gameplay is fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And anyone who's out there will have a link to that in the show notes. And I highly recommend playing both of them. Also, the Coagula 3 one, I died quite a bit. I was like, should I just go into God mode? Just because that was part of Chapters, right? Lost Chapters? Or no, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it was the Lost Chapters.
Got it. So, yeah, those are a lot of fun. But and then you also had a hand. So what I'm getting at is you're definitely, you know, a valued programmer in the community, but you're also an accomplished mapper from way back.
I don't know about accomplished, but
come on. But I guess one thing, just selfishly, because I know RC's played it, but Terra Fuma, right? You were involved in that with Fifth Elephant, and that is to me one of the landmark maps in a landmark mod, you know, Arcane Dimensions. But can you talk a little bit about that collaboration? I know you did scripting and a lot of stuff, but boy, that map blew my mind.
Yeah, that was a really that was a really cool thing to work on, and it was, yeah, it's definitely like far above what I could what I could build on my own. So, but it was also a pretty sort of hectic collaboration. Like, I'm just trying to think of. So, I guess Fifth Elephant and I had done. We'd worked together on. So the IK White Jam, and so it's, yeah, so like, I guess it's, I forget the jam number, but
I'll look it up while you talk.
Yeah, he had sort of a mostly finished map, and then just, I think, emailed me or something, and I was watching his stream, and I don't know how it started, but I just helped do like a bit of I think I built like the start area pretty much, and then we traded it back and forth a bit. So we'd worked together on that. And it was kind of the same thing for Terra Fuma, except like he was mostly finished the map. So he had sort of, I guess he had like a finished map in terms of brushwork, but like, I think he had sort of a concept for how the gameplay layout was going to go, but it wasn't fully implemented. Like, you started on the roof, and there was kind of there was going to be an elevator to take you to the three floors, but like how you would progress through the level wasn't actually set up. So he also had the lighting all done. So like the beautiful, I think the lighting is like one of the awesome parts of the map. That was all Fifth Elephant.
Now I'm looking at a screenshot. Is that the one with lava in it? I'm trying to remember which one it is without firing up the game. Or was it in kind of an underground cave system?
Oh, for the IK White.
Yeah, for the IK one. I'm trying to figure out. I played this. It's been a long time. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, so the one that we did together, it's like if you have the overview screenshot with the 8 pictures, mm-hmm. it's the yep. one with. It's got like a water trough sort of, and then four
minarets. Yeah, the minarets in the middle. Okay, cool. Yeah. that is cool.
Although, like, I think Skaki's map also has the water basin, but ours is like, you can see the four pillars.
Yeah. I see it. And then they're, okay. Yeah, I can see which one it is. Cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So because you guys worked on that one together, which one of you kind of sparked the idea to work on Terra Fuma together?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it was Fifth Elephant or if like Sock might have helped like initiate her. Because, Sock was also kind of, he's sort of like an unofficial third, third contributor on that map because. I think like Fifth Elephant got sort of burnt out on it and he sort of handed it to me and Sock to finish. And yeah, Fifth had put like a ton of effort or he'd put a ton of time into building the map up to that point. And Sock really wanted it to get into the release, that AD update. I guess this would have been the first like big update because it was in the,
looks like it was in 1.5. It was added
right.
to
1.5. Yeah, 1.5.
Yeah, so 1.5 added that like second start area that you have to go through a portal into another map. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Sock really wanted it to be in the update, and he and I put in just a ton of. We sort of did like a 2 week crunch to get the map finished, and Sock made something like. 75 custom textures within these 2 weeks.
Oh God!
Wow.
It was insane. And we were passing the map. So like I did the actual entity setup, and I really only built the start area and then did like alterations to hook it up into a thing you could play from beginning to end. And
You guys built a hell of a map though, because that start area sort of like introduces you to the whole thing. Like it's that start area with the lava, and you could find the secret right there, right?
Right. Yeah, there's
and
like
then,
the nail
yeah,
gun.
That leads you to the base, and the base is this gigantic intertwined thing. Like, I remember playing it, and it just blew my mind when I was recording it for the Quake Rave, because I was like, this is just a massive base map.
Well, I guess I can take credit. Like, I put the ship in. So I think Fifth had built it, and it was just a static, like, detail sitting there. And, yeah, it's sort of funny, because, like, I guess if I had been working on it from the start, it's the kind of thing that would get cut, because it's like, this is a lot of work to set up. But I was sort of coming in fresh. I'm like, okay, this ship has to fly in and like create a cool cutscene. So.
Yeah, that's
sweet. Yeah,
that's a good lesson too for everybody. So like, if you're kind of, you know, I've never collaborated, but I don't think anyone would want to collaborate with me. But maybe RC and I can collaborate. But
we already are.
Yes. Well, that's true. But on a map. But that's a good lesson, because I mean, yeah, people, you get burned out. It's definitely something that happens with pretty much, I would say, any kind of ambitious map. So
yeah,
having someone come in even with notes, you know, and kind of giving you a boost there, and it definitely paid off, because there's so much interactivity in that, at least at the first half of it. I mean, probably all the way.
Yeah,
we played in a while, but at that first half, there's so much going on. There's infighting and monsters that are triggered, and just all. I mean, what a treat it is to play that thing.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of it was like Sock wanted to show off. Well, I mean, I like Fifth and I wanted to do it as well, but he had features ready that he wanted. To sort of like, I don't know. He wanted the map to kind of use the power of the things he was building. So like a lot of the, there's some really interesting door setups where you can like unlock the door from either side. And depending on which way you come, it'll like the buttons will get disabled differently and stuff. So we worked pretty hard to make sure that you couldn't break it by like going in one way and then jumping off, like jumping off down into a pit and then going a different route or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think I misspoke. I believe it's the 1.7 update. I'm trying to confirm, because I know people get really irritated when we get it wrong. So I don't want to get it wrong.
No way.
Anyway, I'm giving up now because there's so many files in this thing. But okay. Anyhow, so that's Tfuma, right? I call it Tfuma. And so let's move on to Quake Spasm. And one other thing I want to say, and I always kind of, you know, just imagine if you're sitting here, I'd be like standing over you, massaging your shoulders, going, let's talk about Quake Spasm. So, I mean, I call you Quake's MVP a lot on Discord, because you're involved with two super important projects, one being Quake Spasm, the other we'll get to Trench Broom. But tell us about how you got into Quake Spasm and kind of some of your contributions to that project.
Yeah, it's funny. It's similar to actually Sleepwalker's story about how he was, I think he said he got a Mac and then he wanted to port Fitzquake to it. So mm-hmm. he started SDL Fitzquake, which then was forked into Quake Spasm. So I was a Mac user for quite a few years, and I was using SDL Fitzquake back like when it initially came out, 2008 or so. And then I guess I just started using Quake Spasm because that's what SDL Fitzquake sort of stopped development, and then it was forked. So I was already using the engine, and I can't remember. I think the first way that I got into coding for it was just it didn't have music support. And actually, yeah, it was kind of funny. Like, I wasn't talking to the developers, and we both started coding music support at the same time. Without realizing that two
Oops.
People yeah so that can happen sometimes with open source, but I think this was like Spirit over at Quedicted had these engine bounties, and it was like sort of features wanted for Quake engines, and it was like there was a $20 bounty or something. And yeah, one of them was implement MP3 music support in Quake Spasm. So I was like, oh, I'll do this. And then, but I didn't tell anyone. So anyway, so I did actually, I coded up like Aug or MP3, I guess it was Aug music. And then it didn't end up getting used because the Quake Spasm devs did their own. But it was still kind of like, it wasn't a total waste. It was.
Yeah, it was, you could give that code to Baker. And that's an inside joke, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a very inside joke. But you could give the Aug code to Baker.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah. So that sort of got me, like, I hadn't really touched the Quake engine at all. So that sort of got me, like, into the, a little bit familiar with the code, although it takes quite a few years to get familiar with the code of the Quake engine. But so what after that? I'm just trying to remember.
So
that was like 2010-ish, I guess.
Yeah, so you've been developing. I mean, I know you took a break recently, but you know, I'm assuming it was off and on for quite a while on Quake Spasm, because there was a lot of motion. I don't know what version that was, but obviously it kind of exploded from there.
I think there was only, I didn't touch it for a couple of years. And then I think in 2014, right. So yeah, I guess what got me like really more active with Quake Spasm was I wanted to play Tronin's map. I'm trying to remember. It's a BSP2. It was the first BSP2 release outside of the Remake Quake demos.
Narlathotep, maybe?
It was a bit before that one.
Something Wicked. Well,
Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Something Wicked's from 2012, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. So this was... Yeah, this, as far as I know, was the first like serious release that used BSP2, mm-hmm. which at that point was, when it came out, you had to get the RMQ engine, and it had some like customizations for Remake Quake. It wasn't designed to be like a general use Quake source port. And it wasn't, I'm not sure if it had stopped development at that time, but like, yeah, the project had shut down. So you had to sort of use like a discontinued engine. And I guess I was on a Mac too, so I either couldn't run it at all or even, there was like a Mac build, but it ran at about 5 frames per second or something. So this map just looked awesome. Oh, and I should also... just mention something about Tronin maps. I remember playing, what is it? So I was like years earlier, I followed Underworld fans, Quake level reviews. I guess that was sort of like, it came after Team Shambler. And it was did you guys ever check out that review site?
I'm aware of it, but I didn't play it back in the day because I was I'm a multiplayer guy until 2015. So I didn't
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's so I think it ran. It's hard to pick the dates out, but like there was Team Shambler in the 90s. That was the Quake single player review site. And then that shut down around 2000 or something. There was Planet Quake Level of the Week was a good source also to get like level recommendations.
And then RIP. I miss it.
And this Underworld fans, that was the name of the owner of the site. It was kind of like a successor to Team Shambler. And it was just, really nice like single player review site. So I guess this was active like the mid 2000s. Anyway, so I was playing single player maps that came out like fairly regularly, I guess. And I remember Tronin's. So I think it was either a Desert Dusk or a Desert Dusk 2. I just have a specific memory of playing this around like 2002, 2003. And I was just completely blown away. Like, I don't know. Have you guys played
I don't think I've played those. No.
Okay, it's
I don't think I did either.
Yeah, it's like an Egyptian, Egyptian themed, and it uses the sort of robotic scorpion from the mission pack.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. I just found it like, I guess I'm sort of a fan of Tronin's like crazy battles, and he has a really unique Quake style. And
he totally does, from the few that I played of his, it's like not everyone's
a fan, but sort of like there's a bit of there's story, there's sort of like the epic kind of fantasy feel,
like a bajillion enemies, like
I think
was it the Scorpion Garrison, perhaps Desert Dust 2, maybe that
yeah
probably.
Quite so, yeah
on Nightmare 167 monsters.
Oh yeah, so like I think I was probably playing on Windquake at the time, so like obviously this trend of crazy monster counts has sort of spiraled further than further than that.
Oh yeah.
But I just remember specifically like when I played this map, I just thought like Quake single player is just like you couldn't get this kind of experience in like a commercial game. And it's sort of, I just remember thinking like, this is absolutely awesome, and I'm just gonna keep like Quake. I remember thinking that Quake was definitely, it was starting to feel like a retro game at that point, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remember thinking like this, it's sort of getting to the point where, I don't know, the mappers are doing like crazy, they're just taking it to like really interesting, crazy gameplay. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that seems to be the consensus with a lot of people nowadays. Most of the people we've been interviewing over the past few weeks have said the same thing, that they love where Quake, you know, level design has been going as of late, because everyone is bringing all these new ideas to the forefront.
Hmm.
Yeah, I got to say this, and I think RC will have an opinion about this, but my son played Dusk Episode 3, and that just came out recently, and everybody's a fan of the game is enjoying it. I bought the game, but I haven't played it yet. I haven't played Episode 3 yet. And so he played Christmas Jam. He played all the way through, which I have yet to do. I worked on the trailer, but I still have not got through every map yet. And I know RC has a video, but I'm kind of avoiding it because I want to play the rest of the ones.
Yeah, same here. I still have to play it.
Yeah, I want to play the ones I haven't played, or because there's quite a few I hadn't even seen because they weren't all ready when I cut the trailer. So, but he told me something really interesting, and it was totally true. He said, I played through the whole thing in one sitting, and it was way better than Episode 3 of Dusk. And it really struck me that he said that because he was such a huge fan. But it's so true. Just all those, we are talking, I don't want to say AAA, but professional level content that comes out, you know, week in and week out throughout the year. And it's really it's really impressive that this game is that old and there's that much passion. And that's what I wanted to say earlier too, is that, you know, if it wasn't for Quake Spasm, you wouldn't have played Tronin's Map, right? So, but if it wasn't for, you know, Trench Room, I wouldn't be mapping right now. I don't even know. I might sitting on my couch playing, you know, some console game or something, or just, you know, loafing. But I mean, these tools and these engines are so important. So that means, you know, by extension, you know, you and Sleepwalker and those people that really invest their free time in our toys that we get to play with, you know, people have a tremendous amount of respect for you guys. So thanks. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, when's the next release? I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
But seriously, where is it? little factoid here, guys. I thought this was cool. You were talking about Team Shambler because I was like, I have seen this site a lot. I just haven't spent a lot of time on it. The last review was done in 2001. So, it's been a while.
Can we talk about a little bit about what you introduced into Quake Spasm besides?
Yeah,
you know,
sorry. So I sort of got sidetracked there just talking about Tronin's maps. So I guess, yeah, this was kind of like the impetus for starting develop or like getting really into coding because I couldn't, I wanted to play this, Something Wicked This Way Comes. And yeah, there was no BSP2 support. So that part was pretty easy. I forget whose code I used, if it was, so it was either MH, Spike, or Baker had already, so I think like MH came up with the format. Maybe Baker or Spike had already like ported it into another Fitzquake engine. So it was, there was already sort of reference code for how to do it. And just adding BSP2 itself is pretty, it's pretty easy. It's like 150 lines of code or 100 lines of code or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I had pretty quickly, I had a Quake Spasm build on my Mac that could load the map. But the performance was, the performance was still awful. It was like 10 FPS or something. So that got me into like learning OpenGL, which I'd never really done any graphics programming at that point. So it sort of led down a rabbit hole of like, how do you, like, this is ridiculous to get 10 FPS on a Quake map. And this was in, I guess, 2013, 2014. And it was a pretty, like, it was a Mac, so they obviously have underpowered GPUs, but it was a pretty powerful MacBook. So it sort of led down a rabbit hole of learning OpenGL, at least, like, sort of beginner level stuff, and, like, figuring out why it was slow. And then, so it turned out there was a kind of bottleneck in Fitzquake where for when it renders things that were funk wall or any sort of actually any brush models, I guess, other than the world. So like doors or whatever,
mm-hmm.
it would process each polygon as like its own, OpenGL draw call, which involves like all kinds of setup and then sending the polygon to the GPU. And the draw calls are something that like graphics programmers try to really, like, a lot of the work is figuring out ways to minimize them. This was doing one of these draw calls for every polygon. So if you had a complex, I think Tronin had like, there were these sort of big circular pillars, like rocky pillars in the starting area, and those were funk walls just so they didn't chop up the BSP too much. And those things were absolutely like slowing performance to a crawl, so I had to figure out. And I guess this wasn't like really new stuff, like other engines, people were talking about the problem and like other engine coders were solving it as well. So it's just kind of like researching what was wrong. And then I think MH did a similar thing in RMQ engine. So a lot of the Quake Spasm stuff I did was just like taking his ideas and then like sort of adapting them to Quake Spasm.
Right.
But I sorted through these performance fixes and it worked out well. So like, the map was able to run really well on my Mac, and I played it and thought it was awesome.
That's got to be rewarding to be able to I just saw something that RC typed to me. I was asking him a favor. Sorry. You're gonna have to cut that part out. Sorry, I'm not laughing at you, Eric.
Oh, no worries.
Just made a really funny joke. I wanted RC to ask you about your tools, and what did you say?
I said, it sounds personal.
Okay.
So let's talk about Eric W's tools.
He has more than one?
Yes.
Okay. it's an unfortunate... I wish I'd come up with a better name for the tools.
You had a lot of suggestions, but you went back to tools after the fact.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that just to you know, set this up, is that these tools are talked about constantly. Like, whenever somebody comes to the community, everyone's like, okay, you got to download Trench Broom and Eric W's tools. Like, it's always synonymous with that. So it's got like a huge legacy.
Yeah, that's, I guess it's like something I'm proud of. And I guess it started probably in the same, sort of in the same kind of way, like my story about Quake Spasm. And it's really, it's probably the way a lot of Quake, or like the way a lot of hobby development, like writing code for hobby stuff works. And it's like similar to Sleepwalker's story about Trench Room. I was using Turan's tools for my own like mapping experiments, and I guess the jams. So I was doing, I did a couple of the map jams around 2014. So I'd been using Turan's tools for a while, and I think the first thing that got me into the tools coding was adding the ambient occlusion. So I think it was Warren M who had sort of like suggested, or like, wouldn't it be awesome if the lighting had, if we had ambient occlusion for Quake lighting? And this just sort of caught my attention, and I was like, what would ambient occlusion do for Quake lighting? Because I didn't really know what it was, and I sort of looked it up and just started digging around. And
it's kinda, it kind of blows my mind, because I think you like know everything.
Oh yeah. No, so I knew like sort of nothing about graphics when I got started. So the initial thing was just like I dug around in the Q3 map to source code, and was, yeah, a lot of it was sort of hard to follow, but the AO was actually like fairly self-contained and sort of made sense. So all it was really doing is like at every, so you have all these light map sample points kind of that the light utility generates, and they're related to your, like they're every 16 texels, I guess. In Quake, they're sort of locked to your texture scale. And yeah, so you get these points kind of all over surfaces on the inside of your map, like in the playable area. And all the ambient occlusion was really doing was like, it goes to each of these points and it shoots out a bunch of rays, kind of in a cone. And for like a distance of, I don't know, 256 units or something, you could configure it. So it's sort of like, if you just imagine a cone of rays spraying out from like a point on the ground, and they count like how many hits there are and like how far the hits are away. And then it averages them somehow.
So and that just adds a little bit of ambient light, just for people that don't know ambient occlusion, that gives a little bit of more ambient light that looks a little more realistic. It's kind of almost like bounce light.
Right. In fact, so it's sort of like a cheap hack to give you something that looks like real global illumination, but it's more of darkening. So it's like, if there's no, like if this cone doesn't hit anything, there's no darkening. It's just left as it is. But if it's in a corner, or there's like a beam, if there's like some obstructions in front of the point that it's lighting, these rays will hit it, and then that'll sort of, the idea is kind of like light that's bouncing around the room is getting blocked by whatever the obstruction is. So it darkens.
It's the opposite of bounce. I misspoke. So, but you also added bounce lighting to the tools as well.
Yeah. The bounce lighting came later. So this ambient occlusion was kind of like a pretty quick, just coded up, or like I mostly just lifted code from Q3 map 2. And then like within the next day or something, I had something I could post a build of for people to try. And like, there were some bugs like a few glitches with it, and but basically it was just sort of a quick thing, and it worked and it looked pretty cool. So that was sort of rewarding to just have like a concept suggested and then code it and then have a tool working.
Yeah, and I bet you that people are freaking out too. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, and I don't know. I thought it was awesome, or it was like a thing we had never had in Quake.
Oh, yeah.
Lighting. Like, it's in, I guess other games have been doing this for years, so it's nothing really groundbreaking.
But yeah, for our little band of brothers, right, or community of people, it's pretty exciting. Like something like Fong. Having that in Quake 1 is just such a treat. And it's like, oh man, I wanted this for years ago, and now it's finally here, you know. So it keeps the juices flowing for sure.
Yeah, so those ones were the Fong and the bounce lighting were the other two things that they sort of sucked up a lot of time, and they ended up being a lot more difficult than the ambient occlusion. But I don't know, I guess they turned out mostly okay in the end. Like, I'd say light is pretty good, and it has sort of everything, mostly everything that I wanted to do. The bounce lighting is not, like, the bounce lighting could be better, I guess, but it does the job. But yeah, QBSP is more of where, like, I have unfinished business, or like I'm not really happy with. I mean, there's like this missing faces bug that people run into a lot with off-grid stuff.
So Eric, you did the collaboration with Fifth Elephant back in the day, you know, on maps, and more recently with Terra Fuma as well. And it sounds like, you know, there's a little collaboration with the Quake Spasm stuff as far as like taking code, you know, and repurposing and adding things to it.
Right. Yeah.
But you have this ultimate collaboration, which is what is bringing all of these new mappers onto the scene, which is with Trench Broom. And can you talk a little bit about that? Because Sleepwalker had a lot of great things to say about working with you. And how's your experience been working on Trench Broom?
Oh, yeah. No, it's been a lot of fun as well. And yeah, like I pretty much learned C++ just through working on Trench Broom with him. So that's been,
oh, wow.
Like I did C in university, so I was pretty comfortable just with plain C. But C++ is kind of a beast, or it's sort of it's an intimidating language, and it like takes many years to get comfortable with it. So everyone has sort of like a subset, because there's too much crazy stuff in it to use everything. But so it's been really cool.
That's cool. He spoke specifically because we asked him what was the hardest thing you dealt with working on Trench Broom. And he mentioned it was a subtraction tool that he worked on for years. And you sort of convinced him to go another route with it, I guess.
Yeah, I felt sort of horrible. I remember at the time, like I realized how much work he'd spent on this, and I remember just looking at it, and yeah, like it's a cool idea, but I couldn't see, being like a devil's advocate, I couldn't really be convinced that it was like going to work 100%, or like that it was actually calculating a subtraction. And then there were reports coming in where like it didn't produce a subtraction. So I just sort of, I felt bad, but I was like, okay, I'll code up a basic, the sort of like,
you nudged him with some code.
Yeah. So yeah, the sort of QuakeEd, the like id Software's map editor had subtraction, so they were even using it. I remember working on E2M7 because I started with the map source, and there was some awful, like, if you remember that underwater tunnel at the very start, it's kind of like a pentagon shape, and it was clearly they clearly used brush subtraction, and then there were just like little shards of wall. It was just a total mess. But
I'm gonna open that up.
Yeah, so what I implemented is just sort of the basic, like, I guess it's sort of BSP style. Like, it makes a cut for every plane of the thing you're subtracting. So it does tend to be messy, but it, like, I guess it's, the code is simple and it's reliable. So, yeah, that was a bit, I don't know, I felt bad that I was, like, he had an idea for some really kind of, like, rich, sophisticated subtraction idea, and I just replaced it with something kind of plain, and, like, it produces ugly output, but it's reliable.
Well, I think it speaks more to, I guess we'll call it, like, easiness to collaborate or work with, because it seems like some of the higher people in the community, you know, people that, you know, most people respect or whatever, you seem to have a really good rapport with. So I think that speaks to the good nature of you.
Oh, thanks.
like a good neighbor, Eric W. is there, you know.
There you go.
he was very complimentary. I mean, because he had, you know, you kind of bailed him out of this horrible situation, basically, because he had fallen down the rabbit hole. And by the way, I'm looking at the brushwork at this map source from E3M7. It's pretty horrible. Oh. It is pretty E2M7. It is horrible. I'm finding all these. Oh, look at that. That's just terrible.
Like, it's a cool map. And it's totally, sure it was made in like under a week or something. Or it's totally different.
And yeah.
Like, I understand.
And it's a classic.
Yeah, it's a classic.
It's a classic, too. So yeah, exactly. It's funny.
Eric, it looks like... you live in Edmonton, the Great White North, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So, Alberta, Canada. Yeah, it's actually snowing right now.
Oh, wow.
Big surprise, right?
Yeah.
But, no, that's great. I mean, you're just above me, so I'm in Michigan here,
oh,
so
cool.
We're neighbors with Canada, so yeah. But no, that's really cool. It also says, have you lived in Canada your whole life, or
yeah.
Did you migrate there?
Yeah, I grew up on the East Coast, so actually Nova Scotia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the Maritimes were really, it was a cool place to live as a kid, and then moved out here.
Nova Scotia is a beautiful little area, too.
Yeah, yeah, it's beautiful. I guess it's probably quite similar, like, all along. It's probably quite similar to New England in the States. But yeah, I'd love to go back there more just for sightseeing or spend some time there. But
yeah, that's really cool. It says here also that you like going to the Rocky Mountains a couple times a year. What do you do out there?
Oh yeah, so that's one of the nice things with Edmonton. We're still about like four hours drive ish to the mountains, but yeah, I try to get out in the summer for camping. Like, yeah, get up for some hikes and, yeah, in the winter, well, I'm a snowboarder, but going on ski trips and, yeah.
Oh my God. Don't you ever break those rules. the quake community would be a deep trouble.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess that's right. What I've read is the snowboarder's injury is, broken wrists.
Just roll your shoulder, man.
Yeah, and but like
that's like it's like totally 90s though. You're like, you know, you got 90s programming.
Oh, I know,
you
know,
like I shred through the code and I shred on the slopes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing.
That's awesome. I can't snowboard. I have this great story about the first time I tried to snowboard. I went down the hill just fine. I was like, I don't need the kiddie hill. I'll be fine. And I start going down, and the board just slowly shifts. So that way I'm going backwards.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, doing this, like, you know, hand thing. And I just fall into a snowbank. And I look up, and I'm literally probably 15 feet away from the big pole of the lift, the ski lift.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, oh, my God, if I would have kept going, I would have got seriously hurt. So I just I ended up walking down the hill like, I'm getting skis. I'll be back.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. But, yeah, it's it took a lot of experience before I could sort of do it confidently.
So you doing tricks and stuff now, or what's okay.
Just pretty basic just like coming down the mountain. But
yeah, it's better than I can do. I'm kind of the no thanks. I'll take skis. You know, the three times I've skied. But that I mean it's pretty similar to skateboarding.
Yeah, I've never skateboarded actually, but
well, the last time I skateboarded, I caught air and landed on my ribs, and I didn't have a helmet. I was with my kids, and I was like, "Always wear a helmet, kids." And what does Dad do? You know, goes out and reliving
right, has
my
a few
youth.
Beers, yeah, gets on a skateboard.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the deal. And I landed. I'm like, "Go get mom! Go get mom!" I ended up in urgent care that day. It was fun.
Oh God, no.
Yeah, I caught some air. I mean, I hit a big crack, and I mean, I was flying through the air, like woo. So yeah, no snowboarding for me because I'd end up like RC in the side of a snowdrift and
totally
or worse.
That's really cool though, Eric. I like that you kind of spend a lot of time doing like these really complex, you know, programming things, but then you spend some time actually getting back into nature. And is that sort of like a reset for you?
Yeah, I guess so. And like I went to school I did computer science, I guess like Sleepwalker, and I'm programming for work. So that is, I guess it can get a little draining sometimes to program after work for hobbies. So that's also another reason I'd like to get maybe do some more mapping, because it's a bit it's a bit different. It's not programming. One interesting thing I found is you can listen to podcasts when you're mapping, but not when you're programming.
No, so it's like exactly
uses a different part of your brain.
Well, I am nowhere. I'm like in, you know, coding kindergarten right now, but I've been this week, it just happens that I've been switching because of the holiday. I've been switching back and forth between mapping and the evenings that I'm a little more comfortable with. And then in the mornings, when I'm caffeinated, I'm doing some Quake C stuff. And I'm just doing copy and paste stuff. I mean, I think I've maybe written 20 original lines of code, and then I kept my fingers crossed when the compiling went, you know. But you're totally right. I can listen to music when I'm mapping, I listen to podcasts, whatever, but coding is like, I need pure silence.
Yeah.
Complete concentration. Especially from my pea brain.
No, well, that's the Progs Dump stuff you've been doing looks really cool. I haven't had a chance to check out the like the test maps yet, but yeah, looks like
I think
a cool
you'd be
project.
Appalled if you looked at the Quake C, you'd be appalled. But I'm super good at copy and pasting, that's for sure. But it's a fun project, and it's, you know, something I've wanted to do for literally going on 20 years.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And yeah, so I've wanted to do some Quake C for many years, and here I am, finally doing it.
Yeah, and like it's real programming. And like copying pasting stuff, I guess it's sort of like, it's easy to make fun of, but that's still part of like getting up to speed and learning stuff. So
what I love about it is now I can kind of open a piece of QC, like whereas however many months ago, back, you know, 5 months ago, I didn't know what the hell I was looking at. Now I can kind of read it. Now I kind of know what I'm looking at. And it's just a matter of getting the syntax right and putting it in the right place and knowing all the gotchas. Because it's all they should just call it Quake gotcha.
Yeah.
Because everything can go wrong, like one stupid little thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm crawling right now, but I'm hooked. I'm definitely interested. And it was funny because Joshua Skelton, I was like, I want to learn how to code and maybe Quake C or something. And he's like, oh, I wouldn't recommend Quake C as your first code.
Oh, yeah. Like,
I did not recommend. And what do? Quake C.
Of course.
So Eric, we're trying something different in this Quakecast, and we reached out to the community. It was RC's idea. Hey, you know, let's ask the community what they have to think, or if they have any questions. So we got a couple questions from some regulars, some names that you probably recognize. First of all, from Bal has wanted to know what your deepest darkest secret was, so we can blackmail you into more trench boom features. So you don't have to answer. Okay. You don't have to answer.
More subtraction features.
Exactly. Well, let's get that subtraction in line, man. So yeah, I joke with Bal because I call it Trench Bal because he asked for a feature and literally Sleep will go code it and come back with a new merge and it's like, dude, what the hell, you know? So
yeah, he's given
he gets good ideas.
Oh yeah, he's been really helpful. And like the scale and shear tool, that was one of the sort of like most or the time consuming things that I did in 2018. And he sort of came up, a lot of the design was like sort of done with him. I came up with the proposal and it was sort of like based on his ideas and then he helped refine it. So yeah, that was
And an awesome, so welcome to have those.
Yeah. And
those
especially
so great.
Like he's a professional 3D artist, I guess. So yeah, it's cool to have his insights on like what kind of things are useful or what's not useful.
Well, okay. Moving on to the next question, Shambler Knot, and he actually has a serious question. But he wants to know what your white whale is for the tools, you know, some feature or something you'd like to have in Eric W's tools, but you know, that currently is impossible, that just would require a tremendous amount of work to kind of solve.
Yeah. So I guess I sort of, I read this question already. So I was kind of, talking a little bit about that, that missing faces bug in QBSP. So I think like light, I'm pretty happy with, and Viz, I did very little to it. So it's pretty much the original code from Turan, but QBSP, I think it's like the biggest source of problems for people. And, I don't know, I guess I could try to just, I should probably try to just fix, like just set aside a day and try to track down that bug and then fix it. One of the ideas I've been kind of thinking about for a while is, to basically upgrade to the Quake 2 QBSP, it wouldn't be, it would just be an internal like migrating to that newer code.
So you could keep compatibility with other things, but just get some of these other features.
Yeah. So it would look exactly the same from the outside. It would write out identical, like the same formats that the basic Quake BSP as well as BSP2. None of that would change, but like the internals are quite different. And Quake's, I think a lot of the bugs that people run into are sort of kind of inherent in Quake's QBSP design. And yeah, I can just give like a quick idea of why it's such a mess, at least as I understand it. So it takes the brushes, which are like the convex shapes, and then it converts those into faces. So you have this like big sort of ugly sea of polygons, and then it does a subtraction step where it cuts away like parts of these faces that are intersecting. So if you have like a floor and then a wall that like sticks through it, it'll clip away the part of the wall that's sticking through. And yeah, so then it builds the BSP tree with like these polygons that have been clipped against each other. And yeah, one of the issues is that for figuring out what parts of the world are solid or liquid, like the content types, it has to kind of reverse engineer that from these faces that have been clipped into little fragments. So it doesn't actually like, and this is the source of bugs where you can have like leaks going through a solid wall, or sometimes there have been bugs where like you just fall into the void in like a sealed map, which it should be impossible. If
I've actually had that bug early on and I was like, what the hell was this? Yeah. And then I've seen it since then come up a few times.
Yeah. So that's like, it should be impossible if QBSP is working properly. But I think what's happening there is it sort of throws away the information from the brushes, which give you like a nice, it tells you what parts are solid and what parts aren't. And then it has to try to reconstruct that at the end of the QBSP process by like looking back at the faces that are left after all the clipping and sealing and stuff. So it actually looks at the faces and then like tries to reassign the solid, what parts are solid. And I think I have sort of a hunch that that's behind a lot of the like weird issues. And then Quake 2 does things quite differently. So it preserves, it keeps around the brushes and like builds the BSP tree with the brushes. From what I can read of it, it seems like a more robust way of doing things. So yeah, I guess that's one of my wish list items is to port over all the like new features I've added to QBSP to the Quake 2 code base and then like make it compatible with the Quake 1 formats. And I guess it's not that exciting from the outside, but it would be nice if like QBSP was just more robust. And
would that mean that, well, then, and that's certainly welcome. Would that mean that you could do things like the light emitting brushes, and you'd probably get culled away during that, and then but you could use that feature to illuminate like a large area with a big brush that has a light.
Yeah, and then,
or was that, would that not be possible?
Oh yeah, that's definitely possible. I could implement that now, I guess. And but you also get after it.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you reminded me, like Quake 2 support would also be something cool. And like it's sort of, there's some Quake 2 support in Light already, but I just haven't had a chance to test it out. So it would be nice if like the whole suite worked on Quake 1, Quake 2, I think would be sort of cool.
That would be super helpful, I think, for a lot of people. So one last question from One True Purple, who got two shout outs in this episode. He wants to know, all the engines and the tools are all fine and good, but when's the next Eric W. map coming out?
Yeah, I'd love to do more mapping. I haven't given up, or like I want to get back to it, I guess. So, yeah, but I don't know when that'll be, but maybe this year I'll like.
Do you have any ideas that have been kind of percolating in the back and like on the back burner that you want to kind of do? Any themes or things you haven't worked on?
So like I have some map scraps, but it's stuff from like 2010. Ish. Of course, like I guess a lot of people have an episode, so I had like a episode scrap where like I don't know, it's just totally crazy, like it would never get finished, like so they're like six, or I don't know, the plan would have been like five or six maps, and they're just like, it's not quite a box room, like it's more than a box room, but that's sort of about the scale of each, what the state of each map is. So I could pull out a map scrap, or I've I did a collaboration with Tronin and for one of the map jams, the map jam is escaping me, but it's like this
was an explore jam maybe, no. Getting it wrong. I'm looking it up.
Right. Oh, it's the lava jam, I think it was. But it's like a big terracotta castle, like on top of a, yeah, it's sort of a big floating rock thing with a terracotta. And yeah, we had to embarrassingly release this map unvised, so it's like horrible performance.
How could you?
So
that's pretty ironic.
Yeah. I know, it's embarrassing. And we were compiling it right up to the, like I think we merged our two halves of the map and started the final compile like after the deadline. So it wasn't really down to the wire. It was like we were way over the wire.
we'll be ready in a minute.
Yeah, and like we were using the funk detail, but I don't know. There was just no hope of there. It would have. I tried to. So like after the release, I tried to make it viz properly, and it took like a week of work of like grouping things and detailing.
Would it just not viz, or was it just too big to viz practically?
Like it would just, yeah, like it was taking forever kind of. Right. So I think
too big to,
like it would have taken like over a week of viz time.
Oh my god.
But
wow.
So like
too big to viz is my next album.
Yeah. Yeah. Too hot to handle, too big to viz, right?
So yeah, but I guess the sort of a roundabout thing, but I want to, or we're both like, we want to upgrade that map, and yeah, I don't know what there's, so it's basically, it's not dead. Like there's still, it's going to get re-released at some point. Although I haven't really done anything with it. So that's
that's another form, but that's a different format, right? Cause that's two BSP. Like it's another map format, right? Or was this just a typo on here?
Yeah. So I think this is something, this 2BSP is kind of like a weird, thing, like a leftover from Remake Quake, and like they went through two different format iterations, and like I think 2BSP is sort of the not quite the final version, and then Tronin he used the tools for that format for his Something Wicked This Way Comes. So I think at that point we were just using those tools, I guess. I don't know. I think he's upgraded since to the final, or like newer tools, I guess, but I'm not totally sure.
Well, that's Map Jam 6, by the way.
Oh, right.
And I just, yeah. And the reason I say that is because I could be wrong, cause I'm looking at the date of the release of this, and, I got back into Quake mapping roughly around this time in 2015. So it would have been, I probably saw Daz's playthrough of this on YouTube and then started going back to Funk Message Board and kind of poking around again. So I want to say that this pack was like one of the first ones I was like, oh my God, I got to get back into mapping. This is so cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's an awesome pack.
Yeah. It's really cool. I remember this one. And then it ends with tens with that weird face.
Oh yeah. Anyway, the eyes.
I digress. Yeah. There's some pretty funny stuff in there.
Yeah.
Some pretty crazy stuff. So Eric, it's been a real pleasure talking to you about all your projects and your involvement in the community. Just, you know, it's really awesome to talk to you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me. It was cool to catch up and sort of meet you guys in audio form. So, and,
exactly.
Yeah. You've been both doing awesome stuff as well for the Quake community. So keep it up, I guess.
Thanks, man.
We'll try.
Cool.
And you're always welcome back when you have a map to pimp.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Or anything, really.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
You finally do like your first, you know, 360 on a snowboard. Let us know. We'll get you on here.
Just take photos. Watch those wrists.
Right. Yeah.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for DumpTruck_DS.
Don't worry about it. I don't care. I won't.
You can always cut me out.
Yes. Cut me out of the show entirely, actually. I would really appreciate it.
Yeah, see, 2335, Dump Truck talking. 27 minutes, 15 seconds, Dump Truck's talking. Just keeps going down the line. Yeah. Right. Yeah, 29, 28. Won't Dump Truck please shut the fuck up? What was it? I wrote it down because it was funny. Too hot to handle, too big to viz.
It's a big division. Yeah. You can just see me with a V, like a V sign going, yo.
Yo. Who you vizzin?
Too hot to handle, too big to viz.
Yo.
Too hot to handle,
too hot to handle.
Coming in hot, 2019.
Too big to viz.
Too big to viz.
Just vizzing, baby.
Too big to viz.
It's too hot to handle, too big to viz. You call Dump Truck and he's taking a whiz. He's falling down, just quaking and shiz. Drinking a few beers, skateboarding with his kids.
Too hot to handle. Too big to viz.
Yeah.
Too hot to handle.